And I guess you can say we will have you finalizing our transition of Steve working with the youth group and Brian moving into the youth group. And they have been. Since the beginning of the year, Steve's been backing off a little bit because of his classes and everything else. And Brian's been stepping in more, doing more teaching, and has taken over the Wednesday night. Really, right now, we have a kind of a youth teen class on Wednesday night that includes the bus kids. And because of schooling, really, Brian has more of a rapport with those kids than Steve does right now, at least some of those bus kids, and because of the transition. So it has worked well, and I appreciate that, and I think that it will continue to work well. And Steve will support Brian, won't you? Okay, all right. And it'll go well. Back to our secular humanism. Appreciate that being taken care of. There is a motion. There is a motion in the United States to integrate what is known as the ideology of secular humanism. Secular humanism is not going to present itself in an ugly face as something very organized, but secular humanism is more organized than what you think they are. They have their own branch out of University of New York and Buffalo, in Amherst, New York. They have their own university and they have accredited classes. They have classes in universities around the world. In 1995, they were the largest growing camp ministry in the United States. Did you hear what I said? In 1995, that was a while ago, that they were the largest campus growing ministry in the United States. Secular humanism. Years and years ago, Norman Wells brought up the phrase humanism, and everyone said, "What is that?" He was one of the first that presented the idea of secularizing people without God to the point that they could find their mores, their morals, their ethics, their character within the inherent goodness of man. This isn't really behind the table as much as what you think it is. There was a humanist manifesto written in 1935. Humanist manifesto was written by some very renowned people. Who? Let me give you one real quick, like John Dewey, the father of modern public school education, according to the encyclopedia. He is the father of progressive. He's part of progressivism. You all have studied progressivism in the United States. And he is indeed, he's a signer of the Humanist Manifesto number one. Would it make you feel good to think that one of the main architects of our school systems today was one that signed his name to a piece of paper, "No deity will save us, we must save ourselves." That idea was taught, and he taught regularly. In fact, there's a whole bunch of lectures by John Dewey. And they're his Harvard lectures. It is called his pedagogical creed. And he taught his philosophy to many, many teachers. And for many, many years, his philosophy became the philosophy that was taught many teachers in their public university classes. It has really influenced itself in many different areas. These people, though, have a website. And may I tell you, they are very organized. They have a book publisher called Prometheus Books. Prometheus Books publishes many, many different books, and you can find a good number of them. They have a whole book house online, as well as their own publishing printing organization. This is the magazine that I get, being a senior member of the Council for Secular Humanism. There's two main groups, Council for Secular Humanism, the American AHA, the American Humanist Association, which is stationed in Washington, D.C., which we usually visit. I usually visit it with the advanced group when I'm in there. Kurt Vonnegut. Anybody know who Kurt Vonnegut is? Kurt Vonnegut, a very colorful man. He was a movie star for a while. He was actually one of the men that was trapped in Slaughterhouse 5. And a very colorful man, died 2 years ago. He was the president of American Humanist Association for a number of years. This one is a magazine that is put out, and still the guy that is in charge of the Council for Secular Humanism, he amazes me. His name is Paul Kurtz. I've given you his picture before in some areas, and I've mentioned his name before. The thing that amazes me about Paul Kurtz, he's probably one of the most subtly influencing people in the United States to the negative. The thing that's impressive about him is I think he's older than Jack. Paul Kurtz, yeah. Paul Kurtz is right at the door 90. And you say, well, what's so great about that? The thing is, he's still leading a whole movement. And he still teaches in university classes, and he travels the world teaching secular humanism to anybody and everybody that will listen. This magazine, called Free Inquiry, is subtitled Celebrating Reason and Humanity. You have cartoons in it, Fundamental Atheists, Humanism and Humane Arts, going down here, Why Secularization Has Failed in the Muslim World, We Are All African, Darwin Is Indeed the Emphasis, it says here. I'm just reading you some of the titles of some of these. Some of the contributors I have met and attended some of their classes, Tom Flynn, who is in here. He has written and he has come to Cincinnati for a couple of times. There used to be a branch of secular humanists in Cincinnati called Fig Leaves. I don't know why they call themselves Fig Leaves. But anyway, FIG stood for something. Free Inquiry, I don't know, Geriatrics. That wasn't that. Free Inquiry something. But I attended a couple of them. And all I had to do was pull out my membership card. And this Baptist preacher was sitting on the front row. Little did they know. It was in a class off at UC. I attended a number of years ago. I've been very tempted to go to one of their, they've had a couple of their big ones, and I've wanted to go to one of their big ones to be able to see this. Richard Dawkins, if you know who Richard Dawkins is, Richard Dawkins is considered one of the greatest scientists alive today in England. He's an English man. He also wrote the book that was recently a bestseller in last year called The God Delusion that hit the bestseller there. Sam Harris, also a very controversial figure. He wrote The End of Faith, and right now, if you ever watch Fox News or CNN, whatever else, and you're dealing with a humanist, atheist, free thinker, they all call themselves the same thing, perspective, usually Sam Harris, a young man that's very, very sharp, very well-spoken. He's usually the one that is involved in there. These are names that you need to know because you're going to see them. So when they come in, realize, and you watch the news, you're going to see these people come up here and there. They also have organized. They have manuals. Believe it or not, they have manuals on how to live. I'm bringing to you right here. Here's a non-theistic humanist wedding ceremony. You can actually have wedding ceremonies that make sure that God is left out and praises the value of the humanity of the two that are being married. Meaning there is no God and we've got to do everything ourselves. There are also whole books, whole manuals given over to how to have funerals for humanist funerals. Now that is something, isn't it? But they also have humanist church services. Explain that. Why have humanist church services? I don't know. But let me give you one of the songs. Are you ready? It's to the tune of Holy, Holy, Holy. You all know that song? Holy, Holy, Holy. You all know that one? It's one we sing. We sing that, don't we? Have we sung that? Yeah. Are you ready? Here's what you would hear if you attend the humanist church service and you pulled out your hymn book and said, turn to page so-and-so. And to the tune of Holy, 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 here's what you would sing. Coffee, coffee, coffee. Praise the strength of coffee. Early in the morning, we rise to thee. Thoughts of thee only. Serve fresh or reheated. Dark. Don't forget, I am a card-carrying member. Yeah, this is the only one I've endorsed out of all the hymns. Dark by the undefeated, brewed black by perk or drip. And then it goes on to the second verse. Though all else we come to church for coffee. If we're late to congregate, we come in time for thee. Coffee are one ritual, drinking it habitual, brewed black by perk or drip or instantly. Coffee is our communion, our union, symbol of our sacred ground, our one necessity. Feel the holy power at our coffee hour, brewed black by perk or drip or instantly. That's pretty sad, isn't it? Red, yellow, black, and white. How's it go? That is precious in his sight. Y'all know that? How about this one? Red, yellow, black, and white. Let's get together and talk tonight. Tell the truth and have some fun. Let's get together, everyone. White man beat a black man in my town. I can't take this coming down. I'd keep still if I do, but the man who beat the black man may kill my roommate too. It sounds ridiculous, but you know what you think about it? If you remove God, what do you expect? What do you expect? Romans chapter 1. I mean, I've got plenty more to give you, believe me. They have, here's a child. The Masons have a child. Here's a child dedication ceremony for humanists. What do you dedicate a child to? They have some churches, yes. In fact, if you want to know, they have some. Texas has a good number. They're called ITT, Independent Texas Thinkers, I think what they're called. The churches are down there. They have some organized church and church buildings in Texas. The majority of your secular humanists, and this is true, the majority of your secular humanists, they're Unitarian, in other words, in their church building. Most of these are in Unitarian churches. If you've ever heard of Unitarian, those are basically secular humanist churches. You will see some here and there. But anyway, so we dedicate this child. What do we dedicate this child? Child rearing is important. We dedicated this child to live and be tolerant. That's one of the first dedications. We dedicate this child to be encouraging. We dedicated this child to be appreciative. That she'll learn to love, that she learns to like herself, that she learns to have goals. She learns to be truthful. She learns justice and cooperative giving and taking. She learns to have faith in herself, that she'll be honest, that she'll have security, that she'll be friendly, that she learns that the world is a nice place. Thus a child learns by wiggling skills through her fingers and toes into herself, by soaking up habits and attitudes of those around her, by pushing and pulling her own world. And to this we dedicate her. A bunch of garbage. It's abstract. It's subjective. I think probably one of the best things that you and I have going for us. People say Christianity is mindless in this sense. You Christians don't think. They don't know how to think. And I hear that as especially from those in academia and those that are considered self-scholars that feel that people that don't know how to think need religion as a crutch. And you find that argument in many publications. You really do. And secular humanists make that argument very strongly about the need of you and I having to have God in light of just what we need. But the truth about it is, one of the things that they can correctly throw at us is that, well, you don't have to think through what you think is right and wrong. You just adopt a bunch of values and you adopt somebody else's system and you live by it. That's right. I don't have to think about what's right and wrong. All I have to do is open the book. I don't have to worry about, well, I had this experience. No, the Bible says. And therefore, really, for you and I, it ought to be a less stressful life in the realm of what should I do? That question ought to be less stressful than a secular humanist. If you're a secular humanist, you don't believe in God, and you ask the question, what should I do? Now, oh my goodness, the door opens. And why the perspectives of this year are probably going to change for next year. You know, and in light of these circumstances and these events, et cetera, you know, you're constantly in a state of flux. Isn't it great to be a Christian? Because what was wrong in the 1920s is going to be the wrong and the same thing wrong in the 2020s. You and I aren't living that way, right? You're going to say, you know, talking to Kim back here, Wilson, you know, hey, this doesn't seem to be wrong in California. Well, I'm sorry. Californians are wrong because God said so. You know, it's not just a matter of geography that it's wrong. It's accepted in California and it's not accepted in Ohio. God said so. It doesn't really matter the circumstances. And the Muslims need to learn that. The Chinese need to learn that. And everybody needs to live by it. With that said, in Romans chapter 1, Romans chapter 1, if you could get, and you could go back and you could learn Koine Greek, and if you were a lawyer in the first century, you would know that the language in Romans chapter 1 is courtroom language. If you were to walk into a courtroom, you find the terminologies found in Romans chapter 1. The Apostle Paul masterfully sets, before he goes on this long dissertation, and it really is, this is a high-level dissertation. The first half of the book of Romans is a dissertation on soteriology, which simply means that Paul dissects and he brings about and he explains salvation. Salvation is the subject. All are sinners. We call it the Romans Road. You know why it's the Romans Road? Because the whole subject of the first half of Romans is about salvation. You know, all are sinners, right? All have come short of the glory of God. For by one man sin entered the world. We have a lot of our favorite salvation verses from the first half of the book of Romans. And then you get to the climax. You get to the pinnacle of salvation, which is what? There is therefore now no condemnation. And you can live in a way, Romans chapter 8 begins that one, and you can live in a way that says what? All things work together for good. And at the end of that chapter, what do you find? Nothing shall separate you from the love of God. That's the apex of salvation, is it not? And then beginning in chapter 9, we find the attitudes that come from the salvation. And from chapter 9, even dealing with your attitude towards government, and you and I probably need to go back regularly and read Romans chapter 13 if you're feeling the same way I am about government. You need to go back and remind yourself what God says about government. And our attitudes towards life is found in Romans chapter 9 to the end of the chapter. Now that we are Christians. But before we get into this long diatribe and we get into this dissertation of salvation, the pinnacle of salvation, the attitudes that stem from salvation, we have this foundation that is laid for us in Romans chapter 1, and it's highly intellectual and it's very sociological, meaning that it is a perspective of a society from a perspective of a lofty God. And God looking down at mankind and at a society, and God putting a society on trial. Could you imagine what that would be like to be God and to sit on his throne and to look down and say, America, you are on trial. That's Romans chapter 1. You could take every nation that has ever been through civilization, and you could, if you could get the headlines of their newspapers, you could trace every nation, the fall of the Roman Empire, the fall of England as a superpower. You could trace every country, and you could compare it to Romans chapter 1, and you would find that the headlines and the events of those nations mimic the main points lying out in Romans chapter 1 as humanism or man thinking of himself enters. Now, let me give you something real quick, like this is part of the lecture. Humanism is a way of thinking. Humanism is a way of thinking. See, here's the goals. Here's our goals. Let's skip that one. Go on. Let's enter the courtroom. Let's enter the courtroom. Next slide. I already told you that. All right, let's go to the next slide. Sorry, Joe. I kind of went about it in a different way. All right, now we're on it, okay? But before Paul gets into this thing about this courtroom, there's something good that you need to know, and that is, in verse 16, Paul at the very beginning says this, there is a way to avoid prosecution. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, and to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. There is a way that you and I can avoid prosecution. It's a way that you and I, we can avoid. Declares as a way for everybody to be saved. So you don't have to be at judgment, regardless of your race, regardless of your culture, regardless of your history. In verse 16, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew and everybody else. There's a way to avoid prosecution. But there is a code of ethics that must be understood. As we get into this, look at this. Verse 17, God declares within the Gospels what God thinks as right. And that is awful good of God, isn't it? I tell you, the most frustrating thing is to get pulled over for a ticket for speeding when you didn't know the speed limit. You know, I'm going down the road, and there have been places in the United States I've actually looked for the speed limit postings, and wasn't here, so what are you doing? Well, I'm going the speed I think would be appropriate for this road. No reason why 85 won't do. That's humanism. That is humanism. And then I see the posted sign. Aren't you glad God has posted what he thinks is right? Aren't you glad God has posted it? Look in verse 17. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed. The righteousness is, what did I tell you? You can place every time you see the word righteousness, that which is right. That's what righteousness is. That which is right according to God. In light of that, in verse 17, you could say, for therein, that which is right of God is revealed from faith to faith. From one generation to the next generation, the things that are right is revealed. God is not out there hiding his signposts. The speed limits don't have this blanket over them, so you don't know, how should I live today? You know, what should I do? No, look at this. The Bible says that his righteousness is revealed, and those that are just, hey, guess what? That's courtroom terminology. Those that have been justified, in other words, not found guilty in the courtroom, they've got a way of living, and it's by faith. Well, that ties to verse 16. Who are those that have faith? To those that believe, and everyone can believe, the Jew first and also the Greek. So to take that position means that you don't have to worry about the courtroom. Verse 18 and 19 even shows how great God is. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and all unrighteousness of men. Notice the unrighteousness isn't of God. God only reveals righteousness, right? Remember the previous verse? But man reveals that which is what? Not right. And God has shown that he's not happy with what's right. If you don't believe that, read history. God deals with nations that ignore him. God deals with people that turn their back on him. And we're going to see how in a few minutes. We're setting up for this humanistic idea. Now, are y'all with me still? I'm hoping this is good. I'm actually doing more preaching than lecturing, which wasn't supposed to be the way it is. Verse 18 and 19. It's against those that hold ungodliness and unrighteousness. And even those that hold truth. Look at that. You see that at the end of verse 18? That's an odd statement. They hold truth. They don't hold error. They don't hold lies. They hold truth. But how do they hold truth? In unrighteousness. Or they are preaching truth in ways that isn't right. Now, isn't that a weird concept? I'm going to preach the truth. Yeah, but you're not preaching it right. It would seem to be that it's not truth. And that's happening in much in, quote, Christianity today. They hold the Bible and they'll hold some principles of the Bible, but not right. Verse 19, because that which may be made known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it to them. See, God has declared what was wrong. This is very important because we're going to come to a courtroom scene. And you're not going to be able to say, I didn't see the sign. In fact, let me leap ahead. Go to chapter 2, verse 1. I want you to note some things. In chapter 2, we finalize this courtroom scene. But in chapter 2, verse 1, it makes it very clear. Therefore, thou art inexcusable, O man. You don't have excuse. Verse 6, look down at verse 6. God is a good judge, right? See it in the righteous judgment of God at the end of verse 5. And he will render to every man according to his deeds. And verse 11, you say, well, this is a good thing. This is also a bad thing, depending on which side of the judgment you're on. Because the Bible says that God is not a respecter of persons. Well, that goes back to verse 16 of chapter 1, does it not? Because it's to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Whoever believes. But you're going to be judged. And God has revealed his wrath. And he's made known what he thinks is right and what he thinks is wrong. Now, in any good courtroom, there are witnesses, are there not? So in verse 20, we find witnesses. Here are the courtroom. Here's the courtroom, and here's the witnesses. Verse 20, for the invisible things of him for the creation of the world are clearly seen. Now, that doesn't make sense by normal standards, because how can you clearly see invisible things? Did you see that? No, why not? It was invisible. I saw it. It was clearly seen. But follow on. What are we talking about? The verse explains that. Because we understand him. See that? Being understood by the things that are made. The things that are made. We are seeing invisible things by the things that are made. What kind of things do you see by the invisible things that... What kind of invisible things do you see by the things that are made? Look what it says. All right, even his... What does it say? Eternal power and Godhead. Hey, did you see the force that held this world together? Are you all looking around? Are you aware of the power of God? The power of God that holds it all together? Do you see his power? How do you seek the power of God? By looking at the things that are made. You see God's sustaining power. The things that are made. Now listen to me. This is very, very clear that someday, even nature, the Bible tells us this, and the world is giving a witness to you and I. Listen, atheist. That's why Charles Darwin was so popular, because for the first time we had a credence to the elimination of God. And if you can eliminate God from the origins and the beginnings, then you are set to manifest your own destiny. And here's what has happened very clearly in this case. The witnesses are going to be, God says, did you not look around? Did you think that all this happened by chance? Did you ever see a baby being born? Did you ever wonder about the human body and how it's made? Did you ever wonder who told the birds and the sun and all the things that happened? They're going to be witnesses someday to every person that's ever lived that there is a greater power that we should have sought. That's what verse 20 is saying. God said, I didn't see you, God. He goes, what do you call all this? And that will be a witness at that day. We're in a courtroom of secular humanism, or God, the people versus God. With that said, I want you to go to the beginning of wrongful thinking. And you answer me if you think America is here. Verse 21. And here's where the beginning of secular humanism is. This is the beginning of error and secular humanism. When they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Neither were thankful. Abraham Lincoln made that very clear. He says, I forget how he said it on the National Day of Prayer. It's something like that we have grown vain in our thinking to think that we have these choices bounties by our own effort. And he says, and we have failed to see the need anymore to bow our knee and to thank our God. One of the characteristics of secular humanism is an ingratitude. I'm doing some preaching now. One of the characteristics of wrongful thinking is ingratitude. Thanksgiving Day is an important day because it's so much a part of the process of Christian thinking. The day that you quit thanking God for what you have is the day you start going down the wrong path in your mind. Verse, with that said, when you become that way, you become, verse 21, they became vain in their imaginations. Ooh, you see the word vain in the imagination. Anybody know what the word vain is? Empty. Empty. Vain, empty. Mean no content. And the word imaginations here is a good old English word, and I think it's very appropriate. It's appropriate in not only here, but also in the Greek. The ideal is thinking processes. It's not just this ideal of imagination like the little kids have an imaginary friend. That's not what we're talking about. This is how you get from point A to point B to point C in the way you think. If I tell you that this is not a good idea, I can give you the reasons why I don't think it's a good idea. You can give me the reasons why you think it's a good idea. You know what that is? That's thinking. That's imaginations, according to this word. That's what this word means. So these people became empty in their what? Their thinking processes. They became empty thinkers. Why did they become empty thinkers? Did they lower their IQ? No. In fact, quite the opposite happens. Their IQ does not go down, but they have learned to eliminate God from their education, from their thinking. You follow me? They've eliminated God from their minds, from their thinking processes, and they've become no longer thankful to God. We don't have to thank God. After all, coffee, coffee, coffee. We figure things out on our own. We don't need to be thankful for God. I don't have to give him my tithe. I don't have to give him my time. He doesn't exist. So I'm no longer thankful to an ultimate God. I've ignored the witnesses that are around me everywhere, making a testimony that the fact that there is a greater Godhead and a greater power out there. I become empty. And when I become an empty thinker, look at the end of verse 21. Look what happens. Where does it go? Your heart becomes darkened. Now, I have said this over and over again, and please mark it down somewhere. Please, please, please note this. The gateway to your heart is your mind. You see, the Bible says you should guard your heart. Where do you set up the gate? You set up the gate right here. I will set no evil thing before my eyes. On and on the idea goes. Once you become an empty thinker, it'll affect your heart. Once you eliminate God from your thinking, once you get... Now, the irony is, you say, well, these people just aren't thinking that right. But here's the irony to it. Look down in verse 22. They thought that they were getting smarter. Professing themselves to be wise, they become what? Fools. They think they're getting smarter. After all, look how far we've come. Are we not smarter in America today? Come on, we're doing things. We're having heart surgery on babies. We're doing all sorts of things that we never thought for. Aren't you glad medically you live in this age? Half of you be dead otherwise. Okay, maybe not half of you, but some of us probably wouldn't be here. They've discovered all sorts of things, and we can go to the moon, and we can do this, and we can do that, and we understand this, and molecules, and chemicals, and all this other things. And every year, exponentially, we're just understanding and discovering more and more things. I just read recently where they have found something that if all evidence is true, they're pushing it through, that breast cancer is going to be cut out by, what was it, 46%? It has literally cut breast cancer almost in half in women. And they're pushing for it to go through the FDA and be on the market within a year, if at all possible. And why? Because all results are at least that much eliminated in breast cancer. And that's all to the big money that's been thrown into the research and everything else. Professing themselves to become wise, they become. And you know what the Greek word for the word fools is? Do I have it up there? There's you the Greek words, and there's you the equivalent of each Greek word. Professing themselves to become wise, they become moron. That's the Greek word. That's from God's perspective. Because here's the truth about it. Worldly wisdom that doesn't bring you to an acknowledgement of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of God, for it's the power of God unto salvation. all the knowledge in the world, if it doesn't bring you to the gospel, won't bring you to anything worthwhile. See, you can gain the whole world and lose your own soul. That's true of you. That's true of a nation as well. We Americans, we can gain everything. We have the best medical. We have this. We have that. We are Americans. We are all that. But we've lost our soul. We've gained the world, but we've lost our soul. I want you to see something, and something tells me that I'm not going to get through this lecture tonight. Will you all come back next Sunday night? If I have a commitment, I'll break it up. If you're not going to commit to it, then I'm going to do the whole thing. Do you all commit to it? That's what I figured. There are three major steps of humanism in any nation. You take the Roman civilization, you take the Spanish, whenever they were the main country in the world and conquering and sending out ships and conquering South America. You take British whenever, it was said the sun never sets. It doesn't set on the British. You take all the great nations. You can go back to Alexander the Great. You can go back to all the empires of all times. And you can literally take Romans chapter 1. Let me give you the broad outline of thinking. The Bible makes it very clear that humanism begins with wrong thinking. You become empty thinkers, and then you wind up doing what? God doesn't profess you wise. You become wise, and you say yourself you're wise. See, we've become so wise in America today that we don't need God. I mean, we Christians don't need God, do we? I mean, how many of us really have to live in the realm of faith? I don't have to live in the realm of faith. You know why? I have MasterCard. Could you imagine living in a day when there was no such thing? If you didn't have the money in your pocket, you weren't going to get it. I don't know of a man in here that if his children wasn't hungry, he'd go run up his credit card. I would. If my kids honestly did not have shoes and had to go to school or something, I'd put it on the credit card and say, well, how are we going to pay for this? Honey, I'll deal with it later. I'm the man. This is my family. I'll deal with it later. Go get shoes for that kid. That's my problem. I'll deal with it later. That's what I'd have done. Probably did many times. You and I don't live in a country that promotes faith and living by faith. You and I do not really know what it's like to say, I'm going to get up and go to church and hope some reason, whether it be oppression, whether it be soldiers, whether it be laws, hope that I can make it there and make it back today. You and I don't live in that kind of a world. So therefore, you and I, when it comes to this kind of a lifestyle, you and I really don't know it. And you and I are going to be one step closer to humanism than what we think we are. Because you and I have been absorbed into a society that has become highly humanistic. And you are products of your society to some degree. You've been raised in your society. You've been raised in your schools. You have been presented with things. My parents and probably grandparents weren't even presented with the idea of evolution in school. In fact, in the 1920s, when the Scopes trial came up, the whole idea of eliminating creation, or even the idea, that wasn't what Scopes trial was about. Scopes trial was about the idea of maybe presenting the theory of evolution in the 1920s. We're not even 100 years from that. Your grandparents were there in the 1920s, were they not? In the 1920s, the ideal was put to court. Can we present evolution in public school? And it lost in the monkey trial, the Scopes trials in the 1920s. Did you know that? I think today it's kind of flipped, isn't it? We're asking, can we present the theory of creation? And we're trying to be innovative. Well, let's call it intelligent design. Let's call it something. We need to at least present the idea that maybe there's a God out there. No, it's not allowed. we have flipped. You're a part of that society. Well, that hasn't affected me. I've always believed it. Yeah, but what about your kids? What about your kids' kids? What about the kids over here in Northbrook whose parents don't go to church? How much of it do you think they absorb? When they go to the movie theater and they watch these cute little movies about these animals back in the Ice Age, and they casually mention, and they're very cute, and I really enjoy them, and they mention in there 6, 7, 12 times that it was 30 billion years ago. You know, it was 15 billion years ago. What is that? That is just securing an indoctrination that's going on in every aspect. Sure. You're going to tell your children that when they open their science books from the third grade, you're going to tell them that the teacher says, all right, this volcano, we're going to study volcanoes today. I think in our textbooks, I remember that right, the kids made volcanoes in sixth grade. They actually made volcanoes, which is cool because I always come into the classroom when I was a principal to watch them blow up. But, you know, they would make volcanoes and they would study those sort of things. It was in the sixth grade they studied that. You know, are you going to have your sixth grade kid question his teacher when his teacher starts telling him sometimes it takes millions of years for this to happen? No, they're going to sit there and they're going to absorb it. Well, we know better. That's great. What about the other kid next door? What about the other kid? We've been secularized more than what we think we have. We've been humanized more than what you think. Yeah, we have. You just need to admit it. Chapter 1, verse 22. Let me give you this outline. I said that before, didn't I? There's a great exchange happening. Now, just let me present to you the philosophical concept that has to be here. All right? And that is, if God is going to be the authority, all right, and man is submissive to God, that order must be in everything. You follow me? That order is in everything. God's in charge. We're man. He created us. Hey, look around. See everything here? All the things that are made shows the power of God. It shows He's the authority. Right? You with me? Once you take man and you start exalting man, you remove him from that, then you've got this, what I call an exchange going on. Because a country that is run with God as the authority and man submissive to God, we know what he wants, right? He told us what he wants. Here's what's wrong. Capital punishment, for an example. A nation who is underneath God, listen to me, I don't know where you are, but if you're a Christian, I'm going to tell you where you ought to be. A nation that is under God believes in capital punishment. Right? That's a nation that's under God. God says it's wrong. Hey, due process. Please, make sure the guy is guilty. I'm all for that. This is a courtroom scene, by the way. I'm all for that. But, hey, due process. If he's guilty, I believe death row ought to be a real short place. I'm just giving you one value. We're Christians. God's in charge. And here's the value. So therefore, with him in charge, we adopt the values he takes us, tells us to, right? Now, if you and I start thinking of ourselves as authority, now we've got this problem. What do we have? We're going to have, well, my values are important. What I think is important. You can see a nation and a country becoming secularized the more that they exchange values. A nation underneath God, you're not going to have a problem. But whenever a nation comes up, Romans chapter 1, you know what it's about? It is about an exchange of values. The first point we find in verse 22. We already covered that. In verse 22, professing themselves to become wise, they become fools. You and I used to believe that the only one with all the answers was God. That you and I would always be what? Under the umbrella of God. We would always be seeking His face. We would always be asking Him to put His touching hand in. You and I would always recognize that the hand of God, the authority of God, the power of God is supreme over our best efforts, over everything we do. We can have great discoveries, and God will allow a nation. Now listen to me. Study your history books, and there's a couple of Christian books that have been written. Whenever a nation recognizes God as his Lord, guess what happens? That nation, God will glorify. God will raise up that nation. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And the word blessed there means prosperity. Now, I'm not talking about we're just rich. But whenever we came over and whenever we decided to be the kind of nation we did, our laws are all set up on the Bible. Our government is set up on the Bible. I can go on and on. You guys know I could do that. About how that we are so structured to be underneath God. And God blessed. You know that? God blessed. America's history is unprecedented in the world. Their rise to success. I mean, the land itself. We've become, per acre, per population, we've become immediately, well, between the cotton gin and the steam engine and electricity and all these different things, we became the world's leader in everything overnight. In fact, France, who at one time was at a point like America was at, deciding, we're going to create a nation, how are we going to do it? In fact, The Tale of Two Cities is based upon that very same time. If you ever want to read that, it's pretty rough reading, Tale of Two Cities. But anyway, whenever you get there, you realize that France chose the secular route. They didn't choose the human. They didn't choose the God route. And France's history, if you want to read a contrast in histories, compare France's history with America's history. One of Abeka's books, seventh grade Abeka history book, spends almost a whole year doing that, if you want to get a textbook that does that. And in so doing it, you'll find out that whenever a nation chooses the humanistic route, it is bloody, it is nasty, it is never settled, it is divisive. And even today, France, are you aware of this? France has one of the largest Muslim populations now in America. But not only that, I want to give you one more. Are you aware that France has the highest rate of STDs anywhere in the world? You say, wow, that's a statistic. Well, it's not one that you publish everywhere. It's not one that you go out and say, hey, we're the world leader. America has been blessed because God's order. But we begin to think that we're wise. We're wise. We're all this. We're all that. We're wise. Let me give you the second exchange. Whenever man, keep this picture here. Whenever man starts to come out and starts to make himself like God, thinking himself wise. The word wise here is where we get the English word Sophia. Or the name Sophia. It means sophist. If you ever heard of sophists, those that are considered the sophists. There's some books out about the sophists, the wise men of the centuries, the sophists of the years. Whenever we become to think that we have all wisdom, you know, then we begin to exchange values. Beginning in verse 23, all the way down through the rest of this chapter, you find that Romans chapter 1 is about a people that are in a struggle of exchanging values. Let me point out the three to you. In verse 23, you find the word changed. You see it? You find it? There, the word is the idea of exchanging. Also, look down at verse 25. You find the word changed. Have you got it? This is a Bible study, folks. This is a good one. I'm not saying that the other ones aren't, but this is a good one. Verse 25, you find the word changed. And in verse 26 and verse 27, you find once again they changed. See in the end of verse 26? They changed. Whenever a nation begins to think that they've become so wise that God is not so much there anymore, there's going to be a conflict in values. Folks, I don't think there's a better picture of America than Romans chapter 1. You and I are in the battle. You and I are in the forefront of the exchange of values in America. We are. The values that I believe the Bible teaches are not the values that our country, and sad to say, our president and our Congress majority hold to. We are in this great value exchange in America. We are. Romans chapter 1 is a picture. I've told you, you can take every society and you can place it on there. But Romans chapter 1 is not any more current than your local newspaper. It is extremely real. You and I are in this. Now, finally, in verse 28, you finally have what we're getting in America too, which is the third stage of humanism and the last stage of humanism. And that is what? An expulsion of God. So you have this exaltation of man. You have this exchange of values. Let me do it this way. God here, us here, right? We begin to exalt ourselves. Man cannot stay on the same plateau as God. We can't put ourselves up there. This isn't going to work. Either God's going to eliminate us, or God is going to say, hey, no way. You and me aren't the same. And we exalt ourselves. Don't we consider God to be all wise? No, we consider ourselves to be all wise. So therefore, if we're all wise, guess what we get to do? We get to decide what's right and wrong. We get to decide what is mentioned in the previous verses. We get to decide that which is righteous. Because God's wrath revealed against that which is unrighteous doesn't matter to us anymore. After all, we're just as smart as God is. So we have instead, whenever man exalts himself up here, you have this exchange of values. Marriage is no longer valued. Privacy of sexuality among married couples is no longer valued. Not being in debt is no longer valued. I mean, how long do you want me to go on this value thing? You well know as well as I do, I can keep going on all night about values. Newborn life, not valued. Raising children's mothers, being able to dedicate themselves to their kids, raising their kids, not valued. In many, many schools, especially in New England, I read an article here a while back by David Horowitz. It was a very good article, how that he is very bothered by those schools over there, because the single girls that are getting pregnant are getting, got recently at graduation, they got applause when the girls who had kept themselves and got straight A's and put themselves to it and lived virtuously didn't get anything. The girls that got pregnant and they had to work it out to finish school, they became the heroes. Value exchanges. You say, should we not support those girls? We should support those girls. But what about the girls that did right? We use the word heroes very freely in America nowadays. People doing their duty are heroes. Doing your job is heroes. Well, they're heroes in my eyes. Well, maybe so, but anyway, we don't need to get onto it. Let me give you one last thing. I want you to see this. I pulled out the Encyclopedia Britannica. Y'all remember those things? All right. They believe it or not, they once weren't all on the computer or the internet. They actually used to be in books. Some of you young people have never seen an encyclopedia. You've just seen the disc, an encyclopedia disc. But this was an actual encyclopedia, and they used to be very expensive. And did you know that people used to make a living just selling encyclopedias? Yeah, there were actually people that would go door to door just selling encyclopedias. Yeah. So, with that said, in the Encyclopedia Britannica, there are two sections. There, probably the Encyclopedia Britannica set that I looked at would have probably taken up this whole area right here. That's how long it was. There's two sections to it. You have what's known as the Macropedia, and you have the Micropedia. Macro meaning large, micro meaning small. All right? There are certain subjects that were only like a column. So they are going to be where? In the Micropedia, right? But if you get a big subject, it's going to be where? in the Macropedia. So sometimes you'd have to look which one. Well, I looked in the Macropedia, and I could not find humanism at all. Secular humanism, I couldn't find it anywhere. So I went to the Micropedia. I went to the Micropedia, and there are three paragraphs in the Micropedia. Now, since I'm doing this a little bit different, Joe, what I want you to do is I want you to go back to the previous screen, if you would, please. I want you to go back to the previous screen. And you see my 3 points? You see my 3 points there? Have you got those down? The what? The exaltation of man, an exchange of value, and eventually the expulsion of God. Have you got that? For the sake of time, and because we're going to get into those 3 points next Sunday night, I usually bring out this, but here's a copy of that Encyclopedia Britannica, which I had on the next slide. But I want you to stay here. I want you to look at those 3 points. This is that Micropedia, and right here at the very top corner, it says humanism. Humanism. Now, this is the definition of humanism according to Encyclopedia Britannica. Are you looking at those 3 points? There are 3 paragraphs in this article. Let me give you the first line of each paragraph. Are you ready? Point number one, an exaltation of man. What is humanism according to Encyclopedia Britannica? Line number one, humanism is an attitude of the mind attaching prime importance to man and human values. What's important? What God says? No, to man and human values. What I think is right. The first line of Encyclopedia Britannica matches the outline of Romans chapter 1. Man begins to think what? I'm all wise. What is humanism? It is a way of thinking that attaching prime importance to man and human values. Wow. This is crazy. Paragraph number two. What's the next section? An exchange of values, right? Exchange of values. After all, if I'm as smart as God, how do I know God was right? Paragraph number two of Encyclopedia Britannica. Look at exchange of values. Humanism has found inspiration in man's personal quest for truth and goodness. Do you have any goodness in you according to the Bible? How can you know truth? Jesus says, I am the way, the truth. But, hold it, I'm kind of preaching. Humanism found inspiration in man's personal quest for truth and goodness. Listen to the next line. Confining systems of philosophy. Notice the way that's worded. Confining. Confining systems of philosophy. What would be the equivalent of philosophy in the Bible? Imaginations. You follow me? The way you think, that's your philosophy. The way you arrive at things, that is part of your philosophical makeup. How you get to point A to point B is part of your philosophy. And the way you think through it, that's the word imaginations. So let me go back to this sentence. Confining systems of philosophy, religious dogmas. You know what religious dogmas are? Religious dogmas. You know what it means to be dogmatic? I believe in religious dogmas. Thou shalt not kill is a religious dogma. I believe in it, don't you? Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Those are dogmatic. They're religious dogmas. So now we have confining systems of philosophy, religious dogmas, and abstract reasoning have been shunned in favor of human values. So what's the second thing the Encyclopedia Britannica says? That humanism is an exchange of values, getting rid of philosophies, getting rid of religious ideals for what you think is important. After all, I've become wise. What's the third point? We found it in Romans chapter 1 that they changed, right? They changed, they changed, they changed, and they finally got to a point. And man realizes, us and God just can't stay here together. If I'm going to be in charge, then God can't be in charge. This isn't working. And so I'm going to do what? I'm going to get rid of God. Are you ready? In recent years, the term humanism has often been used to refer to the value systems that emphasize the personal worth of each individual. The personal worth of each individual, right? Oh, are we in that in America today? Self-esteem. You know, you're wrong. You know, you're worth it. The personal worth of each individual, but does not include a belief in God. Wow, when was that written? It was written about 10, 15 years ago. Romans chapter 1 was written 2,000 years ago. What the British Encyclopedia has determined is the very same outline of Romans chapter 1. We live in a society that's become humanistic. How do you know it? Because we think that we've become wise to the point that we can now tell God, you know, living together isn't wrong. It's all right. I know you said that in your book, God, but we don't think so. Going up and treating your body like it's a blackboard and writing all over. I know you, what you say about the body is it's a temple of God, but we don't think so. We think it's just for fun. I know you say, God, that sexuality should be between a man and a woman, but we don't think so. We think, you know, we've decided that that is a confining philosophy, and it's a religious dogma. And we have found the fact that we've become so wise that thanks to Charles Darwin, we know this, that we have evolved past that. And I just read an article not long ago saying that we are living in the proof that Charles Darwin is right. You know why? Because sexuality has evolved to the point that it's free and we can enjoy it with each other as much as we want, with whoever, however. Sex, gender, those things are no longer important. In fact, the fact that we are so sexually liberal in America, the article says, backs up Charles Darwin. It's support for Charles Darwin. I would ask this question to the guy that wrote the article. If that is true, survival of the fittest, how does that fit into the great number of STDs and deaths and HIVs that's happened? But the guy chose to ignore those things. And then finally, we get to a point of an expulsion of God. Where are we going to expulse him from? Everywhere we can. He's expulsed from TV. He's expulsed from many programs. He's expulsed from being on the public square. He's expulsed from being prayed at games. Anything we want to get him rid of under God. In any area, we can't have him in your scenes at Christmas time. We can't talk about him in our education. We can't even put him in history, even though that is true history. We must revision it, revise it, and become a part of revision and recognize clearly that God is not all that we are. Secular humanism. Romans chapter 1. Next week, we're going to look at the verses that go with the great exchange. Brother Finner.